Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm excited. Should be a good podcast.
Yeah, I know. A lot of good things coming your way. Lots of reaction to what was a very busy weekend.
Some championship talk.
Your tail's wagging. Oh, my God, are you excited? Yeah, some championship talk, although it's not really specific to the championship. It's more of, like, big soccer questions.
Well, congratulations, just in case we forget, to both Norwich and Sheffield United for booking their places back in the big time.
Yep.
Norwich, a regular in the Premier League. They are now the boing boing baggies of Norwich. And Sheffield United back up.
Yeah.
After 12 years.
Yeah, should be fun having them both back. Couple names that most Premier League fans, obviously, even the newer ones here in the U.S., are at least somewhat familiar with, especially, like you said, Norwich. So
yeah, and
should be good.
And Billy Sharp gets his chance to be a top scorer in the top league.
Should be fun. We're here right now. So the first leg of Tottenham Ajax Champions League has not kicked off yet. It's like 11 a.m. right now, Eastern time, when we're recording this.
Yes.
We will have, I know a lot of people may be seeing this Tuesday night and being like, oh my God, they're doing one after. No, we're going to do, this is a weekend reaction podcast. Plus, we're going to speak with Crystal Dunn of the U.S. Women's National Team. That should be fun. We're going to talk to her coming up a little bit later on in the podcast. Our Champions League recaps, as per usual, will be out Wednesday night, probably somewhere around 9 o'clock.
So we're just doing the Monday podcast
on Tuesday. Yeah. Nothing about this is confusing at all. It's all very normal.
People don't like the fact we don't have a rigid schedule.
I had one question for you before. We will do a little bit of Champions League previewing, but my first question for you about that is, do I go DVR method, shut myself off from reality?
Yep, first leg. Oh, well, no, you have a choice. It's the first leg.
Still one of the biggest games that I have ever witnessed for this club.
It was the biggest game at White Hart Lane. Biggest game in North London since Arsenal were in the Champions League semi-final.
I think I'm going to try. Now, I will say it makes it difficult for me to do my actual job when I turn my phone off and don't go on the internet.
Producer for the Michael K. Show.
It becomes hard to do my work.
Well, no, let's... yeah.
But I think this game rises to a level where I think I'm going to try.
Absolutely. Yeah. The semi-final?
I know.
Spurs are taking on Benfica.
It's just not to say that I think of Tottenham as like a small club. I don't.
But they have been for the last 30 years.
It was to the point yesterday I was on ESPN FC and I just saw, it was just an innocuous poll. Like, who do you think will advance to the Champions League final? And it's Ajax's logo. And then there's the cockerel of Tottenham.
Yeah.
And it just hit me. I was like, they're playing in a Champions League semifinal to go to a final. Like, this is... This club, this is crazy.
You know what I do if I was you?
What?
Have a small lunch. When you get home, you're going to watch it. And, you know, put on some food. Order some food and make it a thing of it.
Maybe.
Crack open a few cans of Stella. Mm. Come on, you Spurs.
I'm really excited. A couple other kind of house cleaning notes real quick. Like we mentioned last time and like I'm going to continue to mention. For the people who missed last week's podcast but are still angry at us for an article we did not write. We are not the website Caught Offside. We are literally just a podcast that has no affiliation with them whatsoever.
We're barely affiliated to ESPN, to be honest.
I'll probably say that a few more times just to make sure everyone who needs to know does know, but that's me saying that. And also, please subscribe to our Caught Offside podcast feed. I was stunned. We said that on last week's show.
Yeah.
And I went and kind of checked some of our mentions, and there were so many people that had no idea that we have our own specific podcast channel on
hugely
iTunes.
Hugely worrying. What have we been doing?
Yeah, on Apple. Well, it's no one's fault. We just haven't mentioned it, so there's no reason for people to have
known. Bad job by us.
So if you get us on the ESPN FC feed, that's great, but I would highly recommend that you specifically subscribe to the Caught Offside feed, because once we get enough subscribers on that channel, we might start doing things specific just to that channel, like exclusive content. So everybody do that. Make a habit of doing that. And here we go, JJ, now into the weekend that was in the Premier League. And we start at the top of the table with the title race. The status quo remains. Mm. Liverpool do what you would expect them to do to Huddersfield, a 5-0 thrashing. Manchester City do kind of what you might expect them to do against Burnley. You know, what a lot of teams do against Burnley is eke out a slim victory. And when I say slim, I mean that in the most literal sense possible.
Yeah, it was millimeters. But prior to this game, the millimeters people were talking about was the Liverpool non-goal at the Etihad, and now this is another one to add to the collection. But I mean, City battered them for long periods. Tom Heaton, really big argument for him in terms of form as being England's number one, or that he should be England's number one goalkeeper. You can't say that that City didn't deserve it. Turf Moor, tough place to go to. Pep had even spoken beforehand about, you know, Chris Wood, long balls, kind of the archetypal English game. They got that. Mm-hmm. But they got 3 points, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. And look, I mean, possession was what you would expect it to be for City. It was something like 77-23. Shots were what you would expect them to be. I don't believe Burnley had a single shot on target in the game, which was not even what they were really setting out to do. This was just, hey, today we are Liverpool, and we're going to try to do this for Liverpool, essentially.
Yeah, they were one of the armies of the North that wanted
they
to
tried.
Help.
Yeah. I would think as a Liverpool supporter, you could watch that game, and even though it didn't go the way you wanted, you would at least look at Burnley and say, well, we appreciate the effort.
Oh,
it was there.
I doffed my hat to the Deichmann.
I want to go a little bit deeper on Liverpool, because the scenario that we've been talking about, the one win, don't win scenario, with each week that goes by, it's not over. Like somebody said to me after this past weekend, so is that it? Now is City pretty much champs? I said, no, absolutely not. This is still on a razor's edge. But with each passing week, it grows closer to being a possibility. And I'm just now kind of reaching a point with Liverpool where I think I've almost crossed a threshold into they're so good and they're so deserving. This specific team is so deserving of a title that even though they're a club that, I'll be frank with you, I've got no love for, I will actually feel some sympathy for them if they don't win this title. They're that good, and they really should. They're of a caliber that they should win a title.
Well, the reason they won't, Andrew, will not be probably over the next two games, although it might be. So let me say this first. This weekend is the final window for slippage. Now, slippage doesn't come from Liverpool, because Liverpool, for some months now, whether we like it or not, whether we want to call this a title race or not, have been behind City. It's just been a case of Liverpool have had that game in hand over City.
Right.
And they've been City have had that game in hand over Liverpool. It's been relentless from City. Every time Liverpool have gone back top, City win their next game. Liverpool won't win the league. More than likely, the games will be won out by both sides. Look at the form they're in. Look at the way their players are playing. But it'll be because Liverpool didn't beat Arsenal away. They didn't beat United away. They didn't beat Chelsea away. And at the crucial moment when City had erred all those months ago, February? They had a chance to put a stranglehold on the title. They didn't beat City. They didn't beat Leicester. They didn't beat Everton. They didn't beat West Ham. Those will be the reasons, most likely, as we sit here right now, that Liverpool won't win the title. The drawn games where they had a chance to put the nail in the coffin of City back in January, February direction. And that's the way league titles generally go. Now, looking specifically at this weekend, Leicester look to me, when you see that City will finish with Brighton, even if it's Brighton away, Leicester look to me the last chance of an upset. City, under Pep Guardiola, haven't entirely loved playing Leicester, certainly not in the first season. Mm-hmm. You could see some matchups in the midfield that would be challenging, or at least more of a challenge to Man City's dominance in there. And maybe at some point you see the vision of Tielemans on the ball, Jamie Vardy peeling off the lumbering legs of an aged Company. This is my fantasy, by the way. And spinning in behind and scoring.
It's not an unrealistic one.
That's what you can see. Andrew, that's the window now. That's all there's left for Liverpool, I believe. And also, if you look at the run-in, who's most likely to make a mistake? Liverpool can't slip because they're chasing. They're behind. But Liverpool can make a mistake. Newcastle away. Newcastle are buoyant. There is an emotional attachment between the two clubs through Rafa Benitez and other players. Newcastle are quite similar in their outlook on football to Liverpool, except they've won nothing. That game could be highly charged and might not go Liverpool's way. You've got Barcelona, Newcastle, Barcelona, Wolves. That is a challenging finish for Liverpool.
It's a difficult end to the season. There's no question about it. Like you said, the Barcelona Champions League fixtures mixed in. And we talked last week about Wolves. Against the top six this year, they are the third best team, specifically against those other clubs, of any club in England.
They may not win, but it's not entirely implausible that they really make it difficult and it ends up, you know, Liverpool dropping 2 points.
I guess the thing for me with Liverpool, when I say that I feel bad for them if they don't pull this off.
You prefer the football that they play to Manchester City.
Not even that necessarily.
Yeah, no, that's what it is.
You've decided for me.
It's artistic merit. You prefer watching Liverpool play. There's a thrill to it.
But there's nothing boring about Manchester City to me.
No,
Sterling, Sané, De Bruyne, Aguero, like they're fun to watch
but
too.
But there's more. There appears to be.
Stop projecting your own feelings on the matter on how I
no,
feel.
No, go on.
It.
I'm sorry.
No, the thing for me with Liverpool though is that when I look at them, you know, I want there to be a reason, like a tangible reason as to why they may not win the title. Like I want to say, well, their midfield did this, or they're defending this, or up front this. Like they are, to me, they are a complete team. Like last year, we might have said, well, they're defending at times, but that is like their defending is a strength.
Right.
You know, we know what they are in attack with the three-headed monster up front. They're ruthless. Is there anything that you could look at goalkeeper with Alisson? I know he's had a couple moments throughout the season. Is there anything in the midfield? Naby Keita, maybe. Now, as of late, he's been a different player, but for a large stretch of the season, he wasn't what I think Liverpool fans had hoped he would be. Jordan Henderson, his role kind of switched a little bit. Is there something tangible you can look at with them and say, okay, well, that right there might have been the difference?
I mean, the extent to which Roberto Firmino is injured, but that's not an actual flaw in the team. Mm-hmm. So no, there isn't. Look at the way the fullbacks are setting records in terms of assists. You know, Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold are tearing up the rule book. They're more like wingers now. Look at Virgil van Dijk, which we'll get to later, PFA Player of the Year. Zero. No opposition player has completed a dribble past Virgil van Dijk in any of his 36 Premier League appearances this season. Mm-hmm. His run stretches back to last March, meaning he hasn't been dribbled by an opponent in his last 45 Premier League appearances. Just stuff like that. I don't see fatal flaws. The way the front three works, traditionally, it's not a creative midfield in the normal sense. But like I said before, it's all about executing the press, how they press. That press is coordinated. So, you know, if I was being hypercritical, I'd say we have no ball-playing midfielder who sets tempo. But Liverpool set tempo in different ways to the older teams.
It's fascinating. Maybe there's a little bit of an advantage. Not an advantage, but some of the injuries that Man City have been forced to deal with.
They have a week now.
They do.
No game till Monday.
But we saw, you know, Kevin De Bruyne's status, I guess, is still a question.
Yeah.
We saw Fernandinho go off injured.
I think worrying, Andrew, if they were coming up against really top tier, like if they had to finish with a fully fit Spurs or a fully fit Chelsea, or even had to play Liverpool in the running, but they don't. They've got Brighton and they've got Leicester, a youthful Leicester.
Leicester are good. We'll talk about that in a moment when we look back at their game against Arsenal. If this is how things go, I suppose what we mentioned before, 29 millimeters. This goal right here could be the difference.
Bernardo Silva. In towards Aguero. Still Aguero! Somehow cleared off the line now. Did the ball cross the line? Yes, it did. Manchester City have taken the lead.
Clive Tisley should do all commentary till the end of time.
Did I read that the game he did, what was it, last week for NBC or 2 weeks ago, was the first Premier League game he had ever done?
Ooh.
Like he's done Champions League games, he's done international games, but
that might be correct because he worked predominantly for ITV, who did not have the rights throughout the. That could be right.
Isn't that wild?
It is crazy. I'm sure he did first division games when he was cutting his teeth back in the late 80s, early 90s. He may not have though.
That's crazy.
Wow.
You alluded to it before, but Virgil van Dijk won the PFA Player of the Year.
He did, and I think it was correct and proper that the football writers then gave Sterling the player their Player of the Year. There seems to be a nice balance to that.
Yeah, honestly, it's...
It's fair.
It's too, like, I don't know, throw like put both names in a hat and pick one.
Right, and also, but it's nice to see, for me, for the PFA Player of the Year, I know we've had defensive centre midfielders in the past, Kante most notably, but I do like the fact that centre halves are being acknowledged again. You had John Terry.
Nemanja Vidic won one.
Yeah, but they're sparsely, you know, the creative players always seem to come to the fore, and I understand that.
In the NFL, a quarterback is going to win MVP almost every single year. You're not going to see many offensive linemen walk
home
with
that. Right, but it's good to acknowledge someone who is as with the prowess that he has because he plays centre back in a way that's very pleasing.
Yeah, I mean, look, what they do is a little bit more hard. It's harder to quantify. the effect of a center back.
It is, but at the same time,
like, you have goals and assists, like tangible things you can point to.
But when you've got center halves, like, look at the previous center halves to have won the PFA Player of the Year, like John Terry, Paul McGrath, Aston Villa. If they were exceptional in what they did. You can see them win tackles. You can see them throw their body on the line. You can see them, in the case of Virgil van Dijk, initiate attacks from the back. So I like to see that.
Yeah, I got no problem with it. And like you said, I have no problem with Raheem Sterling winning the Pro Football Writers Player of the Year. He's been, you know,
he's been exceptional on and off the field when you think about the last year he's had. He's risen to a place of prominence. Now, Young Player of the Year at the PFA Awards is slightly weirder because he is a young man, but he is not a young man in terms of the game. He is an established...
He's a vet.
He's a veteran. I mean, he's a veteran of a title of... four title chases now? Come on.
Yeah, that was jarring when I saw him win that.
There was an American idea floated by one of the stats bods, Michael L. Goodman, who's a nice man. I shouldn't be so mean. And he said, he talked about Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, what's so bad about that?
Yeah, we need a better word than rookie. You can't say rookie.
Newcomer of the Year.
Could you imagine, can you imagine them in Sheffield? Rookie of the Year. Can't say that. Can't have that. Newcomer.
I'd like to know why Americans were just assigned that voice by you. Is that me? What is that voice?
Just you. Yeah, we can't say rookie, but I would agree with him in principle. It seems odd to give Sterling an award.
Which PFA versus PFW, which award do you think a player would more want to win?
If he wants the respect of his peers, then the PFA. Mm-hmm. But then he realizes these guys voted in March and often...
Don't watch.
John Giles made the point. Players don't watch.
Right.
And he said back in his day, in the 60s and 70s, the form used to come in, they didn't know half the players and they only marked down the ones they played against. So you got this kind of just the good players, the guys that had impressed them. The football writers for me would be the one. People who see so many games have such a breadth of analysis available to them.
Yeah. Let's see. We move from the top of the table now down a couple slots to the battle for the top four. And what a battle this is turning out to be. Kind of a feeble battle. Sort of just like...
There's a Family Guy drop that I didn't put in where they do something about Jake Gyllenhaal and his sister.
Maggie.
Maggie. Mm-hmm. And it's like arguing over who's the worst Gyllenhaal. And they both argue, now I'm more unrelatable on camera. And then this guy comes in and he goes, kids, please, you're both terrible. And that's what I feel about the top four race. All you guys are just awful. Can I go with VH1, Behind the Music?
Of course.
So my girlfriend, Darcy, as you know, is a huge Spurs fan. So she's swearing up a storm at the weekend over this result. Really annoyed about it. And, like, obviously, she's in the apartment with me, so I think of her. But my mind goes straight to you, Andrew.
Of course it does.
And you know the way I cast
you? As a smile creeps across your face.
Well, can I tell people that I love you, you're one of my best friends, but I don't wish misfortune on you, but when bad things happen to you, I can't help but laugh. For example,
That's beautiful.
There's an ad that runs on Fox and the Yes Network work over a serious issue where it's called the Life Lock, where when people fall over, they press the button and they can alert the emergency services. Whenever I see it, I think of you falling over like this.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
I have this image of you on the floor writhing around like a beetle, and I don't know where it comes from, and I laugh for 5 minutes because it's a misfortune for you. And I cast you as Old Gil as well. So when that goal went in for Mikel Antonio, all I could think of was you in your living room.
Ah, no, not today, not the Gil. I could taste that sail. I was in the zone. All right, man, those nudies are here somewhere. Pan out.
That is true friendship, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's just for people. When bad things happen, it's not that I hate Spurs or anything. I don't have the disdain that you have for Liverpool.
Correct.
But it's because... I imagine you freaking out.
Somebody tweeted at me, and then you couldn't wait to retweet it from the official show account, that that I am a Tottenham curse.
That's not true.
And I read that tweet, and I was like...
That's not true.
And I rarely tweet, you know, from my own account, but I saw it and I was like, okay, wait a minute. Tottenham are about to play in a Champions League semifinal. Like, who's cursed here? Not to mention the fact that, as Tottenham continue to lose these games in the league, in the least Spursy moment in EPL history, everyone else is losing around them.
Yeah.
Everyone is doing all of the things that they need to remain in the spot that they're currently in.
If I was you, I'd just respond, Champions League semi-finalists, so, you know.
Well, I basically did. I said, reminder, Tottenham are just beat Manchester City to advance to a Champions League semi-final.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I said on last week's podcast in What to Watch for whatever reason, I don't know why, if it's purely one of those, it's a derby match, throw records out the window, West Ham are a pain in the ass for Tottenham and have been for a number of years now.
Can I put a question to you from a listener? Luke Golden, who is president of the New York Golden Hammers supporters club. He asked, was this a success for West Ham or a failure for Spurs? I would say success for West Ham.
Yeah, I agree. West Ham played well. Yeah, like, there was nothing fluky about that result.
And it's not like they've been brilliant of late. They've been okay.
For West Ham, I'm glad Mikel Antonio scored the goal because he deserved it. Because he was giving Tottenham fits. I don't know so much about the first half, but in the second half, It felt like he could have maybe had a couple more.
It's just annoying to hand your first defeat in your new building to them, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess that's something that they'll have with them forever. All right, whatever it takes to get you through the day, I suppose. I did want to read this, though. This is a tweet from Simon Stone.
Of the BBC.
He says this about this race for the top four currently. In the last nine days, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, and Manchester United have dropped a total of 27 points. Man City and Liverpool have dropped 33 between them all season. There is a clear gap between the top two right now and then the rest.
Oh, it's enormous.
Like, it's even clearer to me than maybe the gap between, you know, Manchester United and Wolves slash Everton.
Oh, no,
slash
it's way bigger. Wolves are way closer to United than everyone else is to City and Liverpool. Liverpool have obviously been building for about 3 years, and City have been building for since 2012, since they imported the Barcelona brain tank into Manchester. And the level at which they're playing, Andrew, the intricacy of their press and the way they play, it's way, way ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And
look, some of
it's a conversation for another day, but it's concerning.
Like, you look at these teams right now, and I don't know if, like, you want to say, oh, they're all bottling it collectively, but I don't even know if it's that. I just honestly don't know if they're good enough to be of a level where you just expect them to win every week. Just not.
Let's be honest. Spurs' thin squad is stretched to the maximum right now. They're talking about not releasing 17-year-olds to the European Championships because they might need them to be part of a Champions League panel. So that does play a factor in too. I would love to see the miles that the current starting Spurs 11 have put up. It's not good. You can't complain because you just don't get to complain.
Oh, but okay. Because I would say, yeah, you do get to complain when most of your best players are missing time.
I don't know. It's not complain. It's more...
Harry Winks just had surgery. He's done for the season.
It's crazy. Like, you have
look, this
no strength in depth.
There's one thing you need to know. I texted you near the end of the Brighton game when it was still 0-0. And emerging from the sideline was Vincent Janssen, a player that I actually forgot existed.
I forgot where he was. I thought he was on loan somewhere.
No. He's been here all along. I said, well, I guess desperate times call for desperate measures. Like, he is now back in the fold. This is, like, that's incredible.
He's been picking
ridiculous.
Up a paycheck for the last, 2 years for what? Incredible.
Here's another tweet from at I am not Ali Mers. He said, Tottenham played 54 games this season in all competitions. Kane, Son, Eriksen, and Dele have started together in just 10 of them.
Right.
And they're third and in a Champions League semifinal. And they signed no one. And they played the year in Wembley.
Poch is some kind of alchemist.
He's a magician. In some of the other games in the top four, Arsenal losing to Leicester City 3-0. Three straight games now where Arsenal have conceded three goals.
And I get a guy tweeting at me telling me, since... I can't even remember who got injured. Since one of their defenders got injured and Socrates and Koscielny have been the preferred centre-half partnership and Socrates has done great. Has he? What? Did you see him at the weekend? That long ball over the top. Now, Koscielny makes a mess of it, but Sokratis isn't quick enough to go around and cover him.
Fair enough, but if we're laying blame, come on, 90% of that is Koscielny.
You've got to read it, Andrew. As a retreating centre-half, he's not quick enough. I don't want to hear about them. They need to rebuild that back line. And Leno, what was he doing? Leno had a great game, made some brilliant saves. Well, where is his starting position on the kick-out?
He was caught in between two minds, too. He wasn't sure,
credit to Schmeichel for pinging it.
And Ederson-esque.
Oh, it was great. Like, straight down the field, he gets an assist.
And you saw, like, there was no accident there. Vardy kind of, like,
put his hand up.
Schmeichel saw it and then bang, just pinged it right to him. It was
but
really
this isn't
well
the first year we're talking about long balls undoing an Arsenal centre-back partnership. Look at the League Cup final last season. Remember, it's just one big long ball over the top.
Yeah, they've got problems in the back. There's no question
about it. Now, on the Aguero goal, remember that? Oh.
Now, with regards to Arsenal, who knows? Maybe this would have gone differently, but Maitland-Niles was sent off. Now, there's been a little bit of controversy over that, because there seem to be two sides that are not willing to bend. The side that says these are both yellow cards and he deserved it, and the side that says no, they absolutely are not.
No, I'm on the side that says neither of them.
Okay.
Maybe the second one's a yellow because he's late. But the first one is shoulder to shoulder. Now, if you want to say to me, hey, old man, the shoulder to shoulder is slowly but surely being removed from the game. Such as is the ball and man tackle, where you win the ball and then you happen to take the man with you. Oh, and maybe that's the case. Shoulder to shoulder, Andrew. He doesn't raise his arm. He hits him square.
But you
that's
have to ask,
legal.
But you have to ask yourself, why is he doing it? Like, we are in a time now where I think referees are doing more and more to try to eliminate the cynical foul. Like, well, it'll never not be a part of the game because you have to do it at times. But that play, Chilwell is in space. Like, he has played the ball around Maitland-Niles.
He has acres to get into, though.
But he's going to get to it. There's no question about it. He's going to get to it. So when Maitland-Niles does that, it's a cynical foul. And that, throughout the season and the last few seasons, has been a yellow card.
Shoulder to shoulder is not a foul.
But he does it to obstruct Chilwell. Chilwell's getting to that ball.
All right.
That's why he does it. And I thought
the second one, Maddison was like over to him, like, you know you didn't mean it. Maddison had played the ball. If anything, Maitland-Niles should have just stayed on his feet.
Yes, and that's why when you're on a yellow card
and
you go in as late as Maitland-Niles does, I'm comfortable with that being a yellow card too.
I watched it again. He's barely caught him. I don't think he's caught him at all, actually.
Reckless. It was reckless. Here was the analysis afterwards.
It was a late challenge. Michael Oliver tried to play the advantage. It wasn't forthcoming. His touch let him down. And he slides in. Studs show him. Already on a yellow card. I don't think you can have too many complaints.
Yeah. Get out.
Red card.
That's what that is. Mm. Let's see. Manchester United and Chelsea finished 1-1. Oh, David De Gea. My sweet David. What has happened to you?
Well, apparently what's happening is he's moving to Paris. Incredible. What do you do in this scenario?
Ian Wright has a suggestion.
What did Ian Wright say?
Sit him down.
And put Romero in.
It's Romero time.
Yeah. You see, it's not like you're sitting... It's not like you're sitting a goalkeeper that's been giving you trouble for a long, long time. He's out of form since the World Cup, if you want to say that. He's also put in a lot
of... I don't know about that.
He's put in a lot of good performances as well for United. He's had a lot more to do than most Man United goalkeepers should have to do, you would think. But the mistakes, the errors.
Well, that's the thing.
But will this not compound things and make it worse? He's got the yips, and now you're giving him. He will want to play the next game. I'm not sure
if he's. So let's say he has the yips, and you feel like you need to cultivate him and be careful with him. I would agree with that. If he is your long term plan at this position, but you just said, what did you say when we just started talking about him here? He's going to Paris.
Well, the talk.
So, what are you saving him for? What are you trying to worry about his psyche for? Manchester United are desperate to get back in the Champions League. Like, the time for coddling is over. So,
I mean, it was just a dreadful error.
De Gea has made three errors leading to goals in his last four games in all competitions for United, as many as in his previous 123 matches combined for Manchester United. So you're right. This is so out of character, and it's for that reason that, you know, your gut is to say stick with him. Like, he's done so much for you. But I don't know, man. Maybe it's harsh, but I just feel like we're past that now. These games are too important, and they're giving away too many points. Like, they could be in third right now.
I cannot believe that it's in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's plans He's just got the job to move on one of the best goalkeepers in the world. It can't be. And I think this, I think if it's a bad, it's bad for their relationship. It's bad for Solskjaer if he drops him now. I think he should just write it out. I think he has to, Andrew. Unless he knows something that you suggested, that he will be moving on.
First of all, you suggested that. I don't deal in rumors.
That was the rumor I saw today on one of those newspaper websites.
I don't deal in rumors. That's our look at the Premier League for now. Before we take a break, I do want to get into a little bit of the stuff from the championship between Villa and Leeds. I'm sure most people who listen to this show, that means you're probably like in it enough that you've seen what happened. Player got hurt for Aston Villa, stayed down.
Well, player got hurt for Leeds. Aston Villa put the ball out prior to that.
Right.
But the main issue was player for Aston Villa goes down, Leeds play on. In the middle of playing on, Aston Villa players are running towards the players in Leeds players in possession, waving their hands, indicating to kick it out. It goes to the left back, whose name escapes me for Leeds. Yeah. He points as if he's kicking it out. He plays it down the line to, was it Click, who goes in and scores the goal. Mm. And the next thing, there's Conor Horahan loses his respective mind and gets into it. There's all sorts of arms flailing. Patrick Bamford decides to go for an Oscar-winning platoon performance.
I haven't seen yet if he's been punished retroactively.
That's
for that.
That's disgraceful.
But there is precedent. A two-match ban has gone to players before who feign injury to try to get red cards in situations like that.
So John Terry's on the sideline, and it wouldn't be John Terry to be in a tracksuit and not find a way to be involved. So there's words. Bielsa indicates to his players that they're to let Aston Villa from the restart run the ball into the net. That should be fine, except Pontus Janssen, the centre-back, is not on that script. Attempts to tackle the Villa player who slides it into an empty net. Crazy stuff.
Unbelievable scenes in a game of importance. I guess they're both...
No, at that point, I think they both were consigned. It would have taken a crazy goal swing to hold off Sheffield United. And I think that plays into a little bit of Bielsa's thinking. By the way, it was a feisty affair. Cooper could have gone for a tackle on Grealish. Dallas could have gone for a tackle on Grealish as well. Bielsa got a yellow card before even a Leeds player got a yellow card. It's interesting to me, though. This is what Bielsa said afterwards, suggesting that what he did was very much in the spirit of that game that's played in Albion.
Yeah, this is his interpreter answering.
English football is known for sportsmanship, so I don't have to comment. This kind of thing that is common in England.
Suggesting that, I just did what, when in Rome, do as the Romans.
Right, like when he was assigning scouts to go hide in bushes to spy on opponents.
I comply fully with all the English manners.
I'm wondering,
is this a long game by the wily old Bielsa? Is he realizing, this game doesn't matter. We're going into the playoffs. We could very well face Aston Villa, right? Mm-hmm. Are we trying to put into the minds of referees the fairness and the... Because they're only human. The fairness and the Corinthian spirit that just seeps from Leeds United. And that it should a contentious decision come up that we need to go our way in the semi-final or the final. That it's in the minds of the officials. Hey, that Bielsa... He's a good guy. He's a solid potato.
Why are you doing this? Not everything is so deep. Can't it just be he has eyes and a brain and saw what happened and thought, no, that's wrong. Let's do the right thing here.
He's not trying to send him, because he is now the flavor of the month in England.
Because he did the right thing.
Hmm.
If Villa and Leeds were to meet, because right now Leeds are third, Villa are fifth.
Right now it's going to be, as it stands, there's games left. There's games today. Derby play today, and there's also games on Sunday, the 5th, is the last weekend of the championship. My God, does it go on long. Leeds United versus Derby, with the first leg at Derby, and West Bromby Villa, first leg at Aston Villa. Those are the playoffs as it stands now. That could change. I feel like Leeds are running out of steam. I really do. Villa look like the form team. Guys, tune in for the playoffs. There will be fireworks.
There certainly will. There always are. They're always
generally
really
there really
fun.
Is. They're so much fun.
Was there, before we take a break? We'll talk to Crystal Dunn in a few moments. Was there any part of you, because there is kind of the American brain in me that was watching it and thinking that okay, what's happening here with Leeds? This is wrong. But what you did see it transpiring. Like there was a moment where your brain kind of clicks on and you thought, oh my God, Leeds are not, they're not playing it out here. There was part of me that
Villa were totally wrong in not playing to the whistle.
Yeah.
They stood up. Their centre half stood up. Their midfield stood up. Totally wrong. You can't take for granted and just stop the game. You are not the arbiter. You are not in control. It was crazy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, for people who don't really follow soccer, who saw this and said to me, you know, why can't the referee just like blow the whistle? It's, I'm sorry, there's too much ambiguity in soccer with players going down faking injuries.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a thing that's, unfortunately, it's too common in the sport. And a referee can't really, it's hard for him to be in the position to always have to dictate when that should or should not happen. He does the best he can with head injuries. That's supposed to stop play immediately. But for stuff like this, for muscle cramps, things like that, it kind of is, this is the system that has worked for long enough. Yes, conflict arises every once in a while, but I don't see a way. There's no easy fix for a referee to make the decision on the spot who is and isn't actually hurt.
Villa had to play on there, and they didn't.
Yeah. So in the end, all's well that ends well, I suppose, is what you would say. Bielsa did do the right thing.
Well, to be continued.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, really excited about this, JJ, we're going to speak with Crystal Dunn of the U.S. Women's National Team. That should be a fun conversation. She's awesome. As the U.S. are getting ready for camp, next week, I think? And then the World Cup is this summer, so should be fun. Also, we will do a quick kind of brief look at the Champions League first legs. But like I said, really, the recap pod for that will be tomorrow night. Don't go anywhere. Still a ton to do. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Going to give a quick Champions League semifinal first leg preview in just a moment, but JJ, we are really excited about this. The World Cup, Women's World Cup, is coming up this summer. Crystal Dunn has emerged as one of the great stars for the U.S. Women's National Team. 83 caps, 24 goals. We're so happy to have her on the show now, courtesy of Procter & Gamble and Walgreens, which we'll ask her about in just a moment. Crystal, what's up? How are you?
Hi, doing well. How are you guys?
We're good. I guess, now JJ and I have been good. We haven't mentioned this yet because so many people are so frightened about spoilers and things, but I saw you tweet, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago about Game of Thrones, so I do need to ask if you've seen the episode this week yet.
I have not. I had a game actually on Sunday, and I couldn't watch it then, and then my travel day was Monday, so I'm just behind, and I have to stay off Twitter. I can't do it.
Yeah. Oh, we shouldn't mention that.
Don't mention anything.
What happens?
Let me just ask, like, you watch the show. Who do you, if you had to
Who
assign...
do you root for? No, are you up for the Night King?
Obviously not. I mean, I'm a huge Jon Snow fan. Okay. I think he, obviously his journey, he didn't even know who he was for all of the show, basically, and just finds out. And I think, he's just an awesome character, you know? He's, like, so humble. He's like, I just want to do the right thing. Typical kind of just... want to help everybody else before myself.
So this is you. Like, you see yourself in Jon Snow.
Yes, totally.
See, I'm much more of a Hodor, I think. I'm very...
Hodor, you
reliable, sturdy.
You repeat the same things over and over again.
Torn to shreds by White Walkers. Yeah, that's me.
Can I do a classic link, Crystal Dunn? You said, Jon Snow's on a journey. Who is he? Who are you, Crystal Dunn? Because I've been looking back at the recent teams that the U.S. Women's National Team have put out. Mm-hmm. And I also listened to a podcast that you did recently. And so you play the left side of a midfield three versus Belgium, left back in a back four versus Australia and Brazil, mm-hmm. right side of midfield in the defeat to France. Mm-hmm. And some people still call you a forward or a striker.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm very confused, clearly, as you can see. But... yeah, that's just my identity, you know, and I think, it's not easy. I've always told myself it would be lovely to wake up every day and just, you know, commit to one part of your game. You know, if you're a striker, working on shooting, finishing, those kind of drills. But I think for me, it's always been you have to work on everything because you have to be prepared to play everything, you know, and it is not easy, you know, but I think it is a part of who I am and that's just how it is.
Do you need to be versatile to get into this team considering the talent?
Totally. You have to be ready for whatever, you know, and I think that's the new identity of our team, and that's just where soccer is going. You know, I think the sport is always growing. It's always finding new ways and new fun things to add to the game, and I think being versatile is key. I think you see it a lot on the men's side. You see it more so on the women's side, and, you know, nobody's really only specialized in one thing anymore.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, I think most people, you know, when they look at the U.S. women's team, they do view you in maybe more of a defensive role. But now it's early in the NWSL with North Carolina, but you've jumped out to the league-leading goals in an attacking role. Now, I mean, how much would you say your game has evolved in that way?
Yeah, my game, that's just who I am. I always think I'm always trying to push this game to new levels. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, showing the world, yeah, you know, I play outside back on the national team. Do I think it's my best position? I would say no. I think I'm clearly an attacking player. I'm currently, you know, scoring a bunch of goals and assists and things like that. And I think it's great for me to show the world that you can be good at multiple things and you don't have to be labeled as one thing.
Crystal, your time at Chelsea.
Yes.
How did that form, you know, you as a player? Mm-hmm. And what were the differences, we'll say, between the Premier League in England and the NWSL over here?
Yeah, my time in England was incredible. If I can go back tomorrow, I totally would. I loved the area. London is a cool city, you know. And for me, I just learned so much about the game. Everything in England is learning the game, knowing the game, not just, you know, being athletic, but, you know, being able to break teams down with your mind, you know. And I think that's what I really took away from my time at Chelsea is, you know, you could be fast all you want, but if teams are not giving you space in behind, how do you break them down? You know, and I think my technical game had to get better because it was no longer just about running. It was about, you know, like I said, playing in small spaces and breaking teams down. And yeah, the league over there is quite similar to the NWSL. You know, I think the difference is the NWSL is a very transition-based league. There's a lot of space. There's a lot of room to run, whereas in England, teams are a bit more on the conservative side. You know, if you're playing against the top teams in England, you know to maybe probably try and have a five-back. You know, I think in the NWSL, teams just play. They try to play up outright, which creates a lot more space for transition. And in England, there just wasn't that much space.
Crystal, do you find yourself when you're playing over here in the United States, I know you mentioned on the podcast I listened to, you talked a little bit about kick and run, and I'm not suggesting that you said that the American League is just kick and run, but you did say that there was a technical difference. Do you find yourself in games thinking, when you get the ball, well, look, I'm going to try and be a bit more creative here because it's not going to cut it when I play it at the higher level?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, I've always been fast my whole life, and I loved that. I think this game, you obviously have to be athletic in a lot of ways, but I also think that, you know, in order to really improve and add to your game, you can't rely on just one thing. And I think that's what I try to take with myself every training, is just getting better in all aspects. And that's just what I need to do. I need to break down teams in every way, whether that's over the top, you know, through the middle or whatever, but I just need to find new ways of succeeding.
Crystal Dunn joining us here on Caught Offside. I want to go back to your time with Chelsea. This is something I'm curious about, and I hope I get this across in the right way. We've spoken to some U.S. men before who have played over in England, and, you know, sometimes we'll ask them, is there some kind of chip on your shoulder because, for whatever reason, like, the American game with the U.S. men is just not viewed at the level that it is in Europe. But what about for you? Because the U.S. women are so dominant. Like, do U.S. women go over to England and there's almost like a different, like an opposite kind of aura around you guys because of how good American women have been?
Yeah, I think when I went to Chelsea, you know, my teammates did a really good job of just not treating me any different. You know, I think I joined a great group of players where, you know, they welcomed me, but at the same time, they were like, you have to earn your keep, you know? And I think that's really what people need, is that feeling of, you know, it's a new slate for me. I'm a new player. You're getting to know me, and I really have to perform in order to really get a starting spot. And I think that's what I felt at Chelsea, was just that constant competitiveness and you know, just being welcomed.
Crystal, can we talk about 2015?
Of course we can. We might as well.
All right. Okay. So did anyone ever talk to you about why you didn't make the 24? What were the reasons?
Not really, to be fair. I've actually never had that talk with Jill. I think, you know, it was kind of just not awkward. I mean, maybe more awkward for her than me. I kind of was just like, you know, when I was invited back into the next camp after the World Cup, it was kind of like, let's just not talk about it, you know? And to be fair, I didn't need to talk about it. You know, her decision was her decision. And, you know, she's still my coach, obviously, now. And I don't have any ill feelings toward her. I think, if anything, you know, I grew in a different way that I probably wouldn't have had I made that team. So, to me, I'm like, on to the next. And I'm exactly where I need to be 4 years later. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, barring someone, like, forgetting to submit a form or something, you're going to be on this team. So, I mean, take us inside. What is the feeling among this group right now? What are the strengths and weaknesses? I mean, how are you guys feeling as you prepare for this summer?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because we've all been away with our own clubs, so we actually haven't been in camps for a while. And, you know, now we have camp in a couple of days, and we're all going to get back together and really refocus and only focus on the World Cup now. So I think everyone's ready. We've all been preparing in our own markets, and, you know, everyone's preparation has been different games that they've played against, and I just think we're ready. I think this is the new turn that we're in right now, where we are fully focusing on only the World Cup.
Crystal, quite apart from the fact that the U.S. Women's National Team are World Cup champions, mm-hmm. there is a sense from abroad about them. I'm not using the term arrogance, but I would say brash. There is more exposure of the U.S. players on social media. There's more mm-hmm. endorsements. There's mm-hmm. probably more money if we look at it. And it creates a target on your back. Do you feel when you play against teams that are trying to take you down a peg that they perhaps perform a notch, a percent higher when they come up against the Stars and Stripes?
Oh, definitely. I think I've always told people it's so hard to watch film, because when you're watching film on another team, on the team you're playing, play against another team, you know, you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's fine. That's what they do. But then when they play against you, they don't do that, you know? So it's almost like, why did I watch film? This player is not doing the same thing she was doing. She's, you know, she's doing something yeah. completely different. But I think, you know, we've always had targets on our back. We've always felt like, you know, we're the pioneers of women's soccer, you know? And I think pressure is great. You know, we're always under pressure. We're always under pressure to perform and win World Cups. But I think individually, we just have to know that, you know, you have to want it every single day. It's not enough to say 4 years ago we won the World Cup. You know, it's about this new World Cup with a new group of girls. And, you know, everyone has to be at their best.
Crystal's here with us today on behalf of P&G and Walgreens to share mm-hmm. a few beauty secrets that keep her feeling confident and fresh on and off the field. So what do you got?
Yeah, so honestly, I always think, as an athlete, obviously, it's important to just take care of yourself, you know? We're coming off the field, and I play in extreme heat all the time, so everyone needs a good deodorant, you know? And for me, I use Secret Outlast. It's an awesome deodorant that I feel like just makes me feel confident about just being active, you know? And same with Olay Body Wash. I think, you know, after trainings, you have a good shower, you're feeling fresh, you're ready to go. And Olay is really great on the skin, and of course, playing in the sun, like, you got to protect yourself. So those two products are just incredible, and they've worked really well for me.
Crystal, the big question, do you go with the spray deodorant or do you go with stick?
You know what's weird? Over in England, everyone had the spray. They thought I was yep. really weird for rolling on deodorant. And I was like, guys, am I that weird?
They're yes,
like, yes,
yes, you are.
Only one. So, okay, you have an accent. I can hear that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because of the clamminess. You know the way it kind of clams up?
And people are like, it's not good hygiene. I'm like, okay, stop it. But yes, there was a huge debate when I got there. So I'm all about both. I think both are cool.
And just one, sorry to interrupt you, but just, you know, your go-to moisturizer, obviously.
Yes.
If I could have that, what is your go-to moisturizer?
Well, Olay has a really great one. So obviously I'm going to hardcore promote them because theirs is really great. And I don't know if you like put on lotion a lot every single day, but I know for me, like, I have to put on lotion, like, for sure. And I have to have good body wash too, so that my skin just like feels ready to go.
Andrew does not moisturize.
No, I actually believe showering is optional. So this is important for me to hear this. Visit your local Walgreens or walgreens.com in May to buy one secret deodorant and get a second 50% off. Plus, take advantage of a $2 for $11 deal on Olay body wash. Crystal, before we let you go, I saw you honored Serena Williams on the back of your jersey at the She Believes Cup. Have you ever had a chance to meet or speak with her?
No, this is the second person asking me that actually today. And
well,
I'm like,
guess
no.
what? On the line right now. No, I'm kidding.
Stop She's, it. No. I would have been like, Serena, are you there?
Yeah, we don't make dreams come true. I'm sorry.
Stop it. Oh, I wish you guys did. But no, that is my dream, is to meet her or just like brush shoulders with her or something. I don't know.
In terms of a soccer inspiration right now, who would you look to?
Honestly, the girls I currently play with are just incredible. And of course, you know, you have Abby Wambach, who I had the chance of overlapping with for some years, and obviously still playing with Carly Lloyd. It's like, it's still incredible. So for me, I'm like, I dig the current players, and obviously Abby Wambach and Mia Hamm, just all the cliches.
Well, I'll tell you what, this was awesome. We wish you the best of luck as the NWSL rolls on. Then, of course, this summer with the Women's World Cup team. I hope you enjoy the Game of Thrones episode that you need to catch up on.
I will. Don't spill anything.
I promise.
Thank
I won't say a word. So, Crystal, this was awesome. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Oh, Crystal Dunn, that was great.
She's awesome.
Super cool, yeah.
What a hybrid player, though. She has to do a lot.
The embodiment of total football.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the embodiment of John O'Shea.
That's right. He's a striker. Don't forget that.
He'll also play in goal.
Let's see. We've got a very brief what to watch for coming up in seconds, really. But before that, JJ, you have something to tell us.
Did you know that David Silva had a hair transplant?
No.
Apparently he did.
Well, he had shaved his head.
Yeah, but you have to do it.
He
That's
looked like
at the
he
start.
Was like from the future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he asked the guy for all the hair possible onto his head. But do you know what? He should have just gone with Hims. Do you know that 66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35? Or in his case, 32? Not all of it. I mean, he went too far, right? He's like, he had enough hair, and then he decided, let's just not take any chances here.
Yeah.
Let's put all of it on. Thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, like David, it's too late. It wasn't too late for him. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Is that hairline slowly moving, starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? How will you feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? I ask you, do you want a bald spot to pop up or do you want to do something about it first? Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? The solution, Andrew, is 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men, maybe even moisturizer for your, let's be honest, rather flaky pastry face. Motivate your audience. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that bit. Oh, don't bother motivating them. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil. You don't want snake oil. Pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science only. No waiting room. No awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today. Right now, while supplies last. This was cost hundreds if you went to see the doctor or pharmacy. Go to hims.com/offside. That's 4hims.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. David Silva, you don't need to.
Well, I'll tell you what, I feel motivated. There's no question about that.
Yeah, no, can you tell I am behind the Hims product?
Let's see. Brief what to watch for. Just the Champions League semifinal first legs. Today, a few hours from now, 3 o'clock, Tottenham and Ajax. I don't want to go too in-depth on this because by the time you listen, you probably already know what happened. The one interesting thing, Pochettino for Spurs and Ten Hag of Ajax seem to have a little mini thing going on here right now.
Poch is mourning for no good reason.
He says Spurs are at a disadvantage with their injuries, which are a thing, and the fact that they played on Saturday.
Okay, well then work with your organization to change that.
The Dutch league was off to help Ajax.
Yeah, but this was scheduled for months. I've got Reuters here. Dutch FA rules specify at least 2 days of rest between games and that all clubs play on the last two match days.
Hag responded to Poch saying, we get 10 million euros for playing in the Eredivisie, and they get many more millions being in the Premier League. Is that not unfair to us? There are always differing circumstances. Everybody has different circumstances. You just have to deal with them. That's what we do. Yeah.
It's true. I'll give you Eric Gede, who is the technical director of the KNVB, the Dutch FA. We have discussed various scenarios. This decision has now been discussed with all the clubs. But they must, of course, still discuss this with the municipalities and the police. So they sorted that out. The games got called off. What is really nice is the reason why this was necessary. The semi-final place of Ajax in the Champions League. Not only Ajax, but all Dutch football benefits from this. And that's what I like. It's the community sense. Mm. The bottom line is you don't have that in the Premier League. It's so tribalistic and broken up.
It's a great point.
Nobody will do it. Do you think West Ham were going to change their fixture for Spurs?
Uh-uh. Not happening. Look, ultimately, I think they're both right. Like, Pochettino is right. Tottenham have some really bad injuries. Like we just said, Vincent Janssen is playing important minutes right now for Spurs. That tells you everything we need to know.
God, you're on about Janssen all the time.
Because, JJ, I forgot he was... I didn't remember him. But by the same token, Ajax are right too. Like the advantages that some of these EPL sides have, like the money differences, things like that.
And how often does this come up lately for Ajax, for Dutch teams?
In the end, I think what it's left us with is an incredibly even matchup. The SPI, I think, was 51% chance going through for Ajax. So, I mean, we're talking about basically a toss-up here. Yeah. It should be fascinating. And then tomorrow, Barcelona and Liverpool, also fascinating. Barca, unbeaten in their last 31 home games in the Champions League. That's crazy. 28 wins, 3 draws. Haven't lost since late January against Sevilla. However, JJ, there is one and only one English club that has ever gone to the Camp Nou and won in the Champions League.
That's Liverpool Football Club.
There you go.
With goals from Dirk Kuyt and Craig Bellamy.
In 2007. And it's actually been, I said that Barcelona haven't lost since late January. It's actually been even longer since Liverpool have. And that wasn't even in the league. That was in the FA Cup to Wolves on January 7th. I know you don't want to hear this, but I really think Liverpool might be properly suited to deal with Barcelona.
Yes, I know the ways we can cause them problems, but in my mind, there is no way that our midfield is even in the same league as their midfield. So the things that we do well, coordinated press and winning the ball high up the field, have to happen. Is going to expend a lot of energy.
Do you envision any sitting back, not parking the bus, but do you envision any of that from Klopp?
No. It won't work. It won't work.
Well, Sid Lowe spoke a little bit about this matchup. You know, we've had him on recently, expert in La Liga and Barcelona. He talked about this idea of Liverpool kind of being well-suited to deal with Barcelona. Here's what he says about Liverpool's front three.
I genuinely don't think Barcelona have come up against a team that does that over the course of this season. And obviously Liverpool won't be able to keep that up for 90 minutes across both games. But I do think that there's a potential that one of these kind of Liverpool bursts, a bit like we saw against Manchester City last year, could do Barcelona an enormous amount of damage. Now, that's not to say Liverpool will go through, but I do think Liverpool are quite well equipped to make this very, very difficult indeed for Barcelona. And I almost slightly lean towards saying Liverpool might even be favourites, but it would be very, very tight. Mm.
He's talking about the lightning starts. Again, the stuff I'm talking about. Remember Milner crashing into a tackle and a ball breaks to Oxlade-Chamberlain and he buries one past Ederson? That kind of stuff. Busquets is going to have more pressure on him and Rakitic is going to have more pressure on him. That midfield in general is going to be pressurized in a way they probably aren't in Spain week to week. That's going to be interesting. But should Barcelona be able to play between the Liverpool lines and kind of play a bit out of the press, then that's another thing.
Yeah, look, the X factor here is always the X factor when Barcelona play, and that is Messi. Like, if he just happens to have one of those games where he's, who he's been for all of this season, then they become almost impossible to contain.
How imperious a performance would it take from Virgil van Dijk to go 180 minutes versus Messi and still keep that record of not being dribbled past in 36 games?
Yeah, this is the test. You're right. This would be the test. Other guys to watch out for in this, I would say Sadio Mane, for as great a player as he is, still seems to fly under the radar for Liverpool.
The fullbacks as well. Mm-hmm. The fullbacks are going to be absolutely crucial. They're going to give Barcelona something to think about going the other way.
But they're going to have to defend.
And I do believe that they do both.
It bears mentioning, by the way, I know I said I would talk about this on last week's podcast, should it happen, and it did. Barcelona did win their title in the league over the weekend. 8 titles in 11 years for Barca. Messi's first is team captain, so congratulations to him. Barcelona, look, I don't need to sit here and tell you how dominant they are, but now I will. They've lost 3 times in the last 2 seasons in La Liga, and one of those was last year after they had already wrapped up the league title. This team does not lose. But Liverpool have lost just once this year the Premier League.
Look, it was a different Barcelona team that played in 07, but maybe what we need is a fight between Kuyt and Bellamy.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Prior to the game in 2007, they had a fight on the golf course, and apparently Bellamy attacked Kuyt with a golf club. That's where the
who
whole...
Who is he, Happy Gilmore?
That's where the whole celebration came from. When Bellamy scores, he goes to the corner flag and he... like it's a golf swing.
This should be fascinating, both of these Champions League semifinals. I'm excited. I'm clearly excited, as you are as well.
This is the best football on offer around anywhere on the planet these nights.
Well, hey, this was a lot of fun. Our thanks to Crystal Dunn
for
joining us. That was really cool. Look forward to watching more of her in the NWSL and with the women's national team.
All over the field on the women's national team.
And if you miss us, don't fret, because we'll be back tomorrow night with a first leg Champions League semifinal recap podcast, red cards, man of the match, all that stuff.
And a mailbag.
And a mailbag as well. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.